Hello and welcome to Conversations from the Adoption and Fostering podcast. In this episode, we speak to foster carer turned adopter Sushma. She shares her story of challenging the norms and adopting a white British child with additional needs as a single British Asian woman. Sushma's story is unconventional, but now she's working to develop people's understanding of adoption and children with complex needs through blogging and writing. We hope you find it enlightening. And as always, if you've experience of adoption, fostering or special guardianship from any perspective and would like to share that on the podcast, please get in touch through our Facebook page or Twitter or email us at aandfpodcast@gmail.com.
Okay, so my name's Sushma and my mum, so I'll start from the beginning. I live with my parents, and that'll be easier because my mum has always wanted to foster. But it wasn't the right time because mum and dad were working full time. And then my younger brother came along and he wasn't well himself. And then 9 years ago, mum wanted to pick up on the whole fostering thing. We discussed it as a family and we were like, yeah, okay, we'll support you. We're in it with you. So I myself, my mum and my dad went for an information session and learned about how the whole fostering works. And then it was me and my mum that were assessed just because of my dad being deaf. And so my daughter, who I adopted, she was our first child who was like long-term, like permanency. When I say not permanency, but long-term as in we had children before then. This is 8 years ago now, but they would come maybe for a day or a few days and go back to family. So we didn't go into it like with eyes open that we're going to adopt. But then when like we found out my daughter had SEN, mm-hmm. so special educational needs, we then thought actually we want to adopt her. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because we had my brother who had special educational needs and we knew it's not easy and we didn't want my daughter going from home to home. She'd come to us from birth and so we wanted to give her whatever stability we could. It wouldn't make it better, but just that stability. So that's how my adoption route started. And like I said to you, for me, I'm technically a single adoptee because I'm not married, but I don't see myself as a single adoptee because I live with my parents and my older brother, and they're very much involved in everything. And we're Asian, we're from India, from North India, and we're quite, I don't know how to explain it, but I think Asians here, I tend to keep their culture more than in India, because in India, they're very much, I guess, like London is, and that's how I see where we're from. So it's a city, it's not a massive city, but it is a modern city. And I think for me, what I've found is that here people will look, they will speak, they will make a comment, they stare. But when I've gone to India, so I've taken my daughter now 4 times and she's only 7, so that's quite a lot, and I've got nothing, but everyone just sees her for her, to be honest. No one asks me the story, no one asks me anything. They just take us as we are. And I'm not married, like I said. So
that's quite unconventional. I don't think you mentioned explicitly, but your adopted daughter is white, British.
Yes.
That's her heritage.
That's her heritage.
So
and go on.
No, I think that's not the normal flow of traffic, is it? So was there questions asked about that? And, how is that received the powers that be?
Okay, so during... That's quite interesting, actually. So during the... So I'll start from the beginning. So from the powers from be, so my daughter's social worker. When I said I wanted to put my name forward for adoption, she didn't put it in the paperwork. And I assume she had for court when it was the final court hearing. My mum got a phone call from the guardian. He said, you've had your child from birth. Do you not want to adopt her? There hasn't been any reasons why you've said yes, why you've said no. And it was my mum that said, no, actually, we do want to adopt her. So then the guardian came home and, spoke to us all and things like that. So for me, I just felt she just felt that my daughter probably shouldn't be with us. And for me, I believe, even though it hasn't specifically been said, I do believe because of ethnicity. And yeah, so that happened. And I did speak to the manager, the adoption manager, and said, I'm not going to put my name forward if I don't think it, like the assessment is just going to be based on ethnicity. There's no point, I just said. And so I said, I need to know, will I have a fair assessment? And she said, yes. The social worker, she was really good. And I was really lucky because we'd only been fostering for just under a year. And I asked for the same social worker because I knew she did fostering and I knew she did adoption. And so because she already knew my life story, I wanted it to be her. And yeah, thank goodness she was around. And she asked me loads of questions. She asked me to read up about the whole different, how adopters feel coming from, you know, a different ethnicity, how adoptees feel. She asked me to do all my homework. She put loads of questions to me of how I would make sure that her heritage, her culture would be met. And she said something really important to me to bear in mind, and that's always stuck in my head. So she said to me, it's very unusual for like an Asian family or different ethnicity to adopt a British white child. And so a lot of people will look upon you and ask you questions. But if it was a British English family adopting an Asian child or an African child, they would kind of say to you, well, well done, because it's kind of seen as maybe you're saving that child because maybe they've come from a poor country or things like that. And that really stuck at me because, to be honest, I've never had that experience, so I wouldn't have thought that. Mm. And I do get asked, why didn't you adopt someone with the same ethnicity? And I guess, yeah, I think in the beginning, like I was more aware of people's stares and people saying things, but now it's just over my head. And I think it's because my daughter's much older, yeah, that she doesn't care. So why do I care?
Yeah. And seven, you said your daughter's seven, so she's still quite young. Yeah. And
yeah.
So was that, I mean, going into that from the beginning, it sounds like that issue of race was kind of the primary issue, really. Was that frustrating, thinking that actually that's only one aspect of her?
It was really frustrating because actually what I forgot to say is when my mum got the phone call for her to come to us, when we got the paperwork, it actually said it was a bridging placement, and we asked what the bridging meant, because when we were assessed, we were told that bridging is not allowed to happen now. So bridging just means that you're finding the same ethnicity for that child, you're a bridging gap. So obviously that was put in the paperwork. And obviously we questioned that to say, why was bridging being put in? Because obviously we were told that doesn't happen in our area. And so obviously we challenged that and they did take that away. So for me, it was very frustrating because for me, I just felt it's okay for us to foster her being Asians. But when it comes to adoption, it's a completely different ball game. And I thought, you know, it's good enough for us to foster her, but not good enough to adopt. So yes, that did frustrate me because all that we're seeing was the race.
I know you said as well that you, because prior, you haven't mentioned, but you're a teacher, aren't you? You're an SEN teacher.
Yeah. Not so, anymore though.
Not anymore. Well, there's a story to tell there, I'm sure. So tell me all about that then. Come on, tell me, you know, your job beforehand and your preconceptions about adoption and fostering and maybe how they've been.
Okay, so I started off as an LSA, so learning support assistant. And then I was covering teachers as a level 4 learning support assistant. And then I got into the teaching in the same school, to be honest. And so special needs children have always been kind of my forte because my brother had special educational needs and he was the one that kind of like he was the first person to introduce me to that world. And I'm not going to lie, my perception is probably what most people even today kind of think for fostering and for adoption, that for fostering, I'll start with fostering first, so fostering, you know, that child hasn't had the childhood that they should rightly receive. And actually we're going to give it to them and it's all going to be okay. Because that's what it's kind of hyped up to be, that it's just a magic wand and everything will be fixed. So I hold my hands up to that. And same with adoption. I think that's what took loads of people by surprise, because everyone's like, why would you adopt when you can have your own children? Do you not want your own children? And I find that really frustrating. So again, for me, I realized people see adoption as it's for people who can't have children. And I think for us as a family, we've always, like, my mum and dad have always brought us up to, it doesn't matter what religion, what caste, what class you are, money wise, anything, you just love that person for them. So that's my background. So that's the only job I've had, to be honest. So I've been in the same, I was in the same school for 18 years, and then I left 2 years ago just because my daughter's needs were getting greater. But I have now, since the virus, things have kind of changed in a different route. So I've started writing a lot. So I've written a book on my daughter's invisible disabilities and how I've perceived it, how professionals have seen it, because even they didn't understand it or don't understand it. And I've been doing a lot of blogging. And now I'm working for a charity, actually, for families who've lost a child. So I do sibling support.
Right. So, and we'll put all the links. What's the book called?
What's the book called? So it's called, so it's my daughter's name. So it's called Layla's Life, My Words. And I'll tell you how, it's a really interesting story. So how I started it off was, so we've been shielding because my daughter has cystic fibrosis. And I decided, because she was thriving, I'm going to home educate permanently. Yeah. And I thought, yeah. So then I was like, how can I explain this to my friends? Because actually they don't understand the whole adoption, the attachment. They don't understand everything that comes with adoption. So I decided to kind of write blogs on different aspects. And then I realized one blog is not going to be enough. So I wrote different topics, and I wrote about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. I wrote about anxiety, sensory processing, attachment. And it's just like little sections which I've just kind of tapped into, just to get an insight into so people can understand. And for me, it was for my friends to kind of understand and what home education is about. So it's not about sitting down for 6 hours at a table and learning. For me, it was about getting my daughter emotionally, mentally in a right place so she wants to learn.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to change the whole perception of home education as well. Mm-hmm. But actually, since then, things have kind of taken a different route. And Chris Britton, actually, he's the head teacher of the biggest SEN school in Britain. He kind of tweeted that he was actually professional, should be reading it, because it's a story from a parent, which is an eye-opener for professionals, and how we don't treat children individually. We treat them, try and fit them in one box. We try and mold them. So I think that's been really interesting, actually, because also I'd written it for friends, and then I got good feedback, so I turned it into a book. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure about it. So because for me, that book was meant to be for my friends. And then so, like, for me now, obviously, it's price, but I just want to make it clear it's price, so because it wasn't the intention to make money, because I don't want to make money on my daughter's life, if that makes sense, and her disabilities. It's about awareness.
I mean, that's a really interesting point, because I think there's a lot of people in the community sort of are nervous when you see people sort of monetizing their children, but that, you know, but, and again, you, if the way you would write for your friends is very different to how you'd maybe write for a bigger audience. So is that kind of stuff that's all floating around in your head about how you maintain your daughter's safety and kind of her story?
Yeah. I'll give you a good example. So eating is such a big thing for me regarding my daughter, because she would never eat in school, she'd never eat when we're on holiday, and I got it and I was fine with that. But she would always eat at home because it was her safety haven. My professional would say, no, you need to do this and you need to do that. And actually, the bit that I wrote was how I started it was, I had well-meaning professionals and friends advising me, give her chocolate, she'll eat, do this. And I just said, and then I wrote in my book, no, you just need to listen to me. So that's how I've kind of done it. I've kind of done it in my style. Mm-hmm. And people have said to me, even my friends have said, they can actually hear me saying that and laughing out loud, because I've done it in my style. It's not based on what my daughter would say or do, it's based on what I do, the strategies I use, and how I think, if that makes sense.
So it's through the lens of you rather than a story about you.
Exactly. Yeah, because it's my words, and that's why I've made it very clear to say it's my words. So it's my perception.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you are an unconventional family, you were saying at the beginning. So how does that, you know, so you're an adoptive parent, you've got the futures spread ahead of you. What are your hopes and aspirations, and what does the future look like?
I don't know. I mean, the virus has kind of, I'm very lucky and very fortunate. So the virus has been it's very sad, the circumstances and stuff, but for us as a family, things have gone in a very positive way. And so I feel very fortunate, because I know a lot of people, you know, have lost jobs. There's no income coming in, you know, food. But for me, I see it as I want to continue this home education for my daughter. I want to do the best I can for her. So to give a strategy so when she's older, she's independent. I don't see where life takes me, I guess. I'm just going with the flow, because last year was completely unexpected and things happened not the way I expected to, but in a good way. I just kind of, wherever life takes me, I'll just go that way. So I haven't really got any dreams, any aspirations. I think for me, what started from last year is my blogging. And I'm really keen on getting that out there, just because, again, it's just about different subjects, different taboos. So I wrote about racism, because obviously that affected me when I was growing up, and that came in the forelight last year. Mm. And obviously I wrote it in different perspectives, obviously me and what I went through when I was young, how people perceive me being an adoptee, adopting a British white child. So just loads of different things. I've recently written about It's a Sin, so HIV and AIDS. So just things that have come up in the media, that I've just kind of put my thoughts onto it and just kind of getting it out there just to make people think. So, yeah, so more writing, I guess.
So what about you as a family? Do you continue to foster?
We continue to foster, yes. We continue to foster.
So tell me about fostering.
Fostering, I think, and I have to say this right from the start, and the fostering our local borough do know. So I always say it's never the children, but I've always found it's always the professionals that have made it more harder. And I think for fostering, you're nodding, for fostering, what I have found is such a different journey. Your hands are tied compared to adoption. So you want to advocate and you want to do things, and you do, but then it's like you're not allowed to do it because you don't have parental responsibility, even though it might be in the best interest for the child. There's red tape. There's so many other people involved, and so many other people with their different remits and their different advice and the different roles. So even though we love like having the children and that's so rewarding, sometimes it's just frustrating with different professionals and the different remits. Mm-hmm. So my daughter will be 8, so we've been doing it 9 years, the fostering. And so my mum's like the main foster carer and I'm kind of the second foster carer. And the reason why we decided that is because, like, obviously there's my dad, but because he's profoundly deaf, and so, for example, phone calls and things like that, getting hold of us, we just thought it'd be more easy if I was the second carer. But then, like I said to you, so my dad is fully involved with the children, and so is my brother. So he works full time, but we're lucky because, like, before the virus, he would like look after children if we need to go on training, he'd work at home and things like that. So but fostering, it's different, but we do love it because the children make so much progress, and for us it's the little steps. It's not the big things, but just the little things. And yeah, anybody that wants to do it, I'd say yes, definitely do it, but you're mad as well.
No, Shishma, you've sort of painted a picture of a really quite a unique sort of home and lifestyle, but kind of quite fantastic, really. So I don't know, is there anything, I mean, you sort of got in touch with me, so I don't know, is there anything you were hoping you'd be able to say that I've not asked you about, or anything kind of that you want to get off your chest about fostering and adoption?
I think people need to understand that fostering and adoption is a different way of parenting. And I say different way, and I guess the way that for society can understand is this traditional parenting, the way most people may raise their kids, maybe not today, but just how people would think you would raise your kids, to the way I'd probably now raise my children, everyone like that, to be honest, but the way you raise fostering and adopted children, because there's a lot of trauma and the way their brain is wired. And I think society just needs to remember that. And don't get me wrong, I know like they're well-meaning and they want to give you advice and tell you what to do, professionals, friends, strangers, but actually it's not helpful, if I'm honest, because sometimes parents also feel that they're not doing a good job, or if they're doing something wrong. And it's tiring as well when you don't have that support. So I just want to get that message across.
No, it's what most people are wanting to say is really, it's just that this is different, and cut people some slack.
Yeah, exactly. Cuts people some slack. And also, I would like to say, when people use the terminology lucky, like my child's lucky, I personally don't like people saying that she's lucky, because what makes it lucky is just the whole connotation behind it, and how, when my daughter was older, how that would make her feel. Because are you saying that anybody who's not with their birth family doesn't deserve to be loved, or they're lucky because their birth family didn't love them? It's just the wrong conception, because actually their birth family do love them, but it's their circumstances and what's happened in their life that actually they just couldn't be with them in that particular moment. And that's how I see it personally.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, Shishma, that's been fantastic, and I think been really helpful. So tell me what the name of the book is again, so people can remember.
Oh, Layla's Life, My Words.
And what's the name of your blog?
So it's just a British Asian girl living her life.
Just a British Asian girl living her life. That sounds...
Yeah.
There's only one of them. There's only one. There'll be no other blog by that name, I'm sure.
No.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, and I really appreciate your time and your story.
Thank you.